ハリヒオサナラバトゥサハナオブナクトゥサハビヤンカラババハイテジャスヴィナヴァディタマストマヴィデヴィシャヴァハイヒオムシャンティシャンティシャンティオムジャヤシリクリシナチェイタニャプラブニッディアナンダシリアッデイダガダダラシリバサリガウラバクタブリンダHare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare
So, first Adhyaya, Pada 4. Overview of the Adhikaranas. The word Avyakta in Katha Upanishad 1.3.11 refers to the subtle body and not Pradhan 1-7. The Ajja of Svetu Supratara Upanishad 4.5 does not mean Pradhan. 3. The phrase Pancha Jana in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.4.7 does not refer to the 25 elements of atheistic Shankya philosophy 11-13. Brahman is the only original cause, 14-15. The Purusha of the Kaushitaki Upanishad is Brahman. 6. The Atma of Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.5 is the Supreme Brahman and not the Jiva. 7. Brahman is both the efficient and material cause. 8. All names are names of Brahman. Overview of Adhyaya 1.
The Are there how many
Pradas? 16. It means this finishes the first Adhyaya. There's four chapters. Each chapter has four parts. Like that. So it's 16 Pradas. So it said that the Vedanta Sutra moves on 16 feet.
Okay.
Yeah.
It means that we will practically finish the first Adhyaya
3
will remain next year?
Yes. So this establishes these terms, right? And in establishing the terms, we're dealing with the basically the Mayavadis or the followers of Jaini, right? So when we get into the next Adhyaya, then we start dealing with all the varieties of the six systems and all that. Okay. Overview of Adhyaya 1. Adhyaya 1 of Vedanta Sutra, the Samanvayadhyaya, started by positing Brahman as the goal of all philosophical inquiry and the ultimate source of the universe, and then proceeded to correlate the Upanishadic text with Brahman. Right? So that's establishing the supremacy of Brahman. Everything's coming from Brahman. Because otherwise, then these other schools, they'll have a different idea. Because basically, the material world being illusion, then it can't be a transformation of Brahman. That will always be a problem for them. So because of that, then they'll have other meanings to all these words. They'll try to bring everything. It's either the Jiva or Pradhan. You'll always find the argument is about that. So either they are Brahman, right? Or the Pradhan is Brahman. Or it's the opposite, is that it can't be these things, right? It has to be Brahman. And it can't be these other parts. So in other words, the Jiva and Pradhan aren't real. They're illusion. So there's only Brahman. But at the same time, as they'll flip the other side and all these points that are talking about the variety and positions and authority, then they'll make those out to be that those are the Jiva, you know, if not Brahman. If you can't make it about the Jiva, at least Brahman, right? Because we're coming from the same substance, right? Because either way you look at it, is the Jiva under illusion then comes into existence, right? Or because of the consciousness of the jiva, therefore that manifests the illusion of the material world. So at least in that way, then we have some connection. In other words, they're trying to establish that the jiva is the supreme controller and enjoyer. That's their ultimate goal, right? Brahmananda. They want to be the supreme enjoyer. Does that make sense? Sutra 112, Janmadyasya Yataha, confirmed the possibility of the existence of a supremely perfect infinite being from whom all spiritual and material worlds emanate. The following sutras, 113 through 5, then introduced the mandate of the first adhyaya to establish the grand concept of Sarva Shabda Samanvaya, establishing by means of the Tatparya Linga hermeneutical method that the central theme of all Shastra is Brahman, and that Brahman alone is the original source of all generations, the most efficient cause of everything. Right? So, in other words, the hermeneutics or the interpretation is that all things are Brahman. Right? That's what we're trying to establish. They're not the things that are attributed to, that the Upanishads are talking about Brahman, we're not attributing to the jiva or the, how you say, the external energy or pradhan. This is the fun part. We believe in the eternality of the Lord and the living entities, but we understand the non-difference. So we're the one that's taking the position of actual, you know, monism, the sarva kalvidam brahma, that we're saying it's all Krishna. So all these different positions that are being discussed are Krishna in his different facets. And the monists, they're the ones that are trying to establish the duality. Right? Fun, no? Isn't it? Yeah. Right. Yes.
Can we say that they're trying first here, yes, it tries first to establish Brahman, and after this is established, then we can proceed further?
Yes, because once you understand that, then you can go farther. Because if you don't understand the position of Brahman and the variety that comes from Brahman, because Brahman is the effulgence of Krishna's qualities, how will you appreciate Krishna himself as a person with all these qualities? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like where it was, we were discussing in here, or if it was in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, about that some individual, or ninth canto, one of these, right? That there are some living entities that can't accommodate Krishna's seemingly not following the rules, while they appreciate Ramachandra follows the rules. This Mariyata aspect. That was ninth canto, right? Because that's what's bringing up, because ninth canto brought out how it's means one's following the rules, but it's not about the rules, right? One's following the rules because it pleases Krishna, not because the rules themselves. Well, we'll have a problem. Krishna's not following the rules, so if we don't follow the rules, we won't get the result, right? So that's the point. We get attached to the rules because of the results they give, rather than we follow the rules because they please Krishna. So Krishna's pleasure. So therefore Krishna's dancing with the gopis. That makes him happy. That's the perfection of all rules. Right? So therefore I'm following the rules because that's recommended, because that pleases Krishna. Right? So then that works very nicely. But if we look at it, no, the rules are getting, so that's karma, right? And so then the karmis, they're the ones that are most worried about moralism. So whether they are, you know, you could say human karmis, you know, like that, who have the have accepted actually human life, so they are theistic and accept the laws of karma given by the laws of nature, means given by the Lord, or they're on human form of life, so technically subhuman culturally, but they accept the rules and regulations based more on their own speculation, so that they feel that they will become the enjoyer of these things. So it's an atheistic position. But the point is gain comes by morality, right? They're seeing, so it's a higher position. Then the lowest position is just whatever you want, you go and get, and you don't worry about the moralistic principle. I mean, people appreciate, you know, the dynamic aspect of that person and other things like that. When you rub or itch one eye, close both eyes. You're from which part of India? Bombay, okay. So the tradition is that looking at someone with one eye is inauspicious. So if you rub one eye like this, you close both eyes. You don't sit and look with one eye. Okay? Okay. Is that okay? Yeah? Oh, good. Okay. So here, that point is that Tatparyalinga, that hermeneutics, that's what makes the different schools. So we'll understand everything as Brahman. Brahman's coming from Krishna. And how is that managed? That's by Krishna's Paramatma, the localized form. Right? But that ultimately is coming because of Krishna's desire, him as a person. So, in other words, as was said before, that coming to the platform of Brahman, then one can appreciate Krishna as a person. Right? Now, by trying to appreciate Krishna as a person, that also will bring us to the platform of Brahman, from which we can now, you know, very seriously appreciate Krishna as a person. Right? Because we know Krishna as a person. And so we can say is that, you know, but I'm following this personal, but at the same time as us coming from impersonal backgrounds. Right? Means if you're in the material world, basically it's an impersonal background because it's not about the person or the supreme, it's about ourselves. So when we say personal, it means me. Right? And then everybody else is, how you say, is a person in as much as they are in support of my person. Otherwise, then they're the persona non grata, right? Means because that means so persona non grata means they don't support my personal position, so therefore them as persons don't really matter, right? You understand? So, in other words, this is a very important point. It's subtle that it's not the form that makes it personal. That's why we say Paramatma is localized, because we're still not seeing the personal aspect of what is Paramatma's desire. What is his feelings on the matter? We're just seeing that he controls this. So, form does what? Form then can be applied. That application creates transformation. That transformation gets us results. Does that make sense? That's what we're interested in. We're not actually interested in the personal. We just know, okay, I visit this government minister. He signs my paper. I'm nice, I smile, I take him some Mahaprasad, he signs my paper. Do I care about him as a person? Not at all. In fact, that might even get in the way, right? You know, because it's a bad day and he's this and that, and so therefore he's disturbed, so maybe I should come back tomorrow. No, we're not going to do that. We're going to get our paper signed. You understand? So he's just a form that signs papers. So that's how we see everything. The car is a form that gets us places. The different things that we have are all paraphernalia for getting us. Right? I mean, the modern, they call it objectify. Right? But that objectification is only important in how it applies to myself. I don't want to be objectified, but I objectify everybody else, and that's cool. Right? So if we work out a way that everybody can be the center of attention but not disturb others' center of attention, then that's okay. You know, but then celebrity, this, things like that, it pushes the limit, but we have a culture, how far we take it, what we say. And then the rough edges of that, we just say, oh, well, that's the business world, or that's the social world, or this is the real world. All we're doing is making excuses for us behaving in an improper way. Does that make sense? Yes.
So material is there, impersonal by definition.
Yes.
But we see also the Kanishka Adhikari is also, you know, 99% impersonal, because he can relate to other people.
Quite generous. I didn't hear the 0.99. Okay. Yes, that's the problem. Because Prakrita Bhakta means he identifies with the Prakriti. So it's the gain that he will get from that. So, in other words, we have emotional position is very disturbing. Or the economic position or facility is disturbing. Or the lack of knowledge is disturbing. Right? Or wanting to know who is God and what's his position, what does he do, any of these, that's a disturbance. So they go higher as you go. So then, as you go up, then there's the position that it's about what you want. Then it moves to the next stage, where then it's about what Krishna wants. Now one is comfortable in one's material position, so there's still some identity and comfort in that. But it's not necessarily about the gains you can get from that. They're just comfortable in that position. Now, that point of you're not uncomfortable. You know, in other words, one's comfortable being in the grihastha ashram or being in the renounced ashram because you just find it doesn't disturb the mind. So that you go about, but if that's removed, then all these thoughts come up. Does that make sense? But otherwise it's there, so there's still an effect of the conditioning, though it's not the prominent element. Because we see it's already basically gone down by, you know, 75%. So you're left with 25 on down, if you're nicely situated. You know, starting from 60, you get the glimmer of it. So when the predominance is about spiritual life and not about material, that brings it to the Madhyama platform. But to be situated, it comes to 75%. Right? Does that make sense? Then it's, but there's still, you know, one's comfortable with the scenes that are going on. But once it comes to the point of taste, then you start losing an interest in the aspects of the conditioning other than how they can be engaged in the Lord's service. Right? Because before that, you're comfortable in that position. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So in other words, you know, the nice arrangements in the house, or the nice food, the nice clothes, things organized, or what, you know, whatever is the particulars of one's own conditioning. And one appreciates those, but it's not that they take a prominence, that's what you're worried about. It's that they're in the background of the consciousness. So as long as those are there, the mind's peaceful, you're thinking about Krishna. You know, it's just like sometimes you see there's a little kid, right? Small kid. He comes over to the Gurukul. You know, he's all dressed up like the Gurukul boys, you know, wearing the dhoti and the yogi patta and the chugger. And, you know, he looks good. You know, and he's coming over with his mom, you know, like that. And so he likes to come into the school, take part, do all the things like that. You know, he's coming a little later, right? You know, everybody else was there after Mangalarti. He's coming later. And then, you know, after lunch like that, then mommy will come and get him, he'll go home. So he's really there and confident right in it. You think, wow, okay, this guy's good. But that's because he has that comfort of the family scene. Now, once he's not in that, he's in the ashram and fully there, then you start to see his actual position. Does that make sense? So we're saying is that we have these comfortable things. But they're not prominent in the mind. It's just that's the situation we're comfortable with. Right? Now, when one comes to that point of taste and appreciating actually what's going on and the concept of Krishna as a person, you're getting beyond just that, okay, he's the big boss and, you know, if he's happy. If Krishna's happy, we get his mercy. So therefore, if we chant nicely, we get his mercy. It's all about, you know, we're going to get the mercy. You understand? So it comes to the point of he's a person, right? And then pleasing him as a person. Then at that time, the taste of these things that in our comfort zone start to wane. So then it comes up, do I actually need to, you know, let's say, refurbish the house every X amount of years because, you know, it just has that newer, fresher, more organized look? Or is the way it is now good enough? You know, or making that, you know, extra endeavor for all the different things that we do. Then it becomes to a point, is that good enough? Now, if by having it like that it's good for the service, that will be the reason to do it. Right? So in other words, let us say it's, you know, how we decorate the house. So let's say, just for instance, every 2 years or every 4 years we completely redo the curtains, the upholstery, the everything like that. Some, you know, things, how we adjust everything like that. So now we're doing that because we're comfortable in that situation. Before, we're attached to it, we think, this is good, this is me, and all that. That's the neophyte. For the Madhyama, it's just that's the comfortable situation. You just, the mind's peaceful being in that situation. Now it comes to the point when you get that taste that's starting to move on to the next level, right? Then the point comes is this necessary for my, you know, serving Krishna? Now, if it's not, no one ever comes to your house, you're the only one that really appreciates it, then you reduce it down. You keep it clean, nice, maybe simplify, less stuff in the house. It's good. It still looks good because one has that nature to make things look good and organized. But now it you know, starts heading a little bit more minimalistic. Right? You know, you don't need as much tchotchkes in the house and all that. You know? You know, you see when you look in the magazines, there's the kind, they show two kinds of positions generally. The one where there's a million things there, but everything's in a perfect place and coordinated and the colors, and it's just wild. But it all looks good. Or there's the other where only how much you need, only that much is there. Right? So in other words, one starts to move from one to the other. You don't move from the minimalistic up to all the tchotchkes, you know, unless you completely just don't care and then the place just builds up because people give you stuff and you just stick it somewhere. But we're not talking about that.
What's a tchotchke?
Tchotchkes.
Souvenirs.
Gadgets. Souvenirs. Huh?
No, gadgets.
Gadgets. Just stuff, you know. You go into your room, how much stuff you actually use and how much is there because you have it. So the stuff you have because you have it, that's tchotchkes, right? You know, it can also mean the stuff you do use, but it means that, it just means, yes.
So basically, what happens is that the time in Vanaprastha ashram is that.
That would be the natural point for it to come up. It could come up earlier. But that would be the natural point, at least by that time. That's why the Varnashram system is there. It could happen in brahmachari life.
Yeah.
But if not, then in, you know, it may happen in grihastha. If not, at least by vanaprastha. If not, at least by sannyas. You know.
When we honestly look at grihastha ashram, we see if there's still desires are there, like
yes.
Strong desires.
Right, right.
And
right.
Also the time factor, you know, it's just against us. We don't have that time, basically.
We don't have the time, but at the same time we do, because it only takes a moment. But at the same time, if we're working within time, time's against us. If we're working beyond time, then there is no problem for time because we're not working within time. But that means that we go beyond the modes. So that's what starts to happen. Is as we go beyond the modes, then that effect is there. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's just a matter if we understand what's there. What is pure chanting? What is all these things? Then we move to that. Because the point is then, as we're saying, now let's give an example here. Now, we've been using it now up to this point of yukta vairagya, in that it's something that I want or something I'm comfortable with, but it's being engaged in Krishna service, right? Because then you're able to do your service or people come over, this or that. Now we took the stage of, we came to that point where we see that it's not as important. Is for our comfort, because the taste and the name, that's the actual comfort point. Now, we took the example of no one comes to the house, no one's going to really see it. Or who does come to see it, it doesn't really matter, they won't notice anyway. Now, let's say you have someone else who in their house, they're always doing some kind of programs, always having people over, either for their occupational or for devotional kind of things, and it actually has some effect. So then, the only reason they would therefore redo the house would be simply because of its use in the service. But it's not about their comfort anymore. But because their nature is such, they can do that for Krishna. They notice that, therefore they do. While others, then they it's just like you have that person, really congenial person, really nice person, everybody likes them, they always have programs, always inviting people to their house, but their house actually is not that nice. It's a bit of a mess because they're just so much into people and this and that, they don't even notice. But it also reflects in their dressing and everything else. They're just a real simple person. Right? And so therefore, it fits and nobody cares. But if you have the nature where you see these things, you see that the picture is crooked, you see that you know, that, what do you call it, the doily on the arm of the armchair or the sofa is a little out of place, you know, it needs to be, you know, it's square, it needs to be turned, or it's round, it slid one way or the other. You fix, so you see that, you use that in Krishna's service, only because it gets some effect. Otherwise, if no one's going to see it anymore, then the question is do we really need the doily? You know, so therefore we might start to judge, do we need all those pillows? Do we need all those different things that we have, everything there? You know, all those magazines put out, all the different things, everything in its place. We don't, then we start to cut down. What do we actually use and keep that? And we keep it nicely, but we, you understand? So it switches from our need to a position of just being not uncomfortable to actually what's useful in Krishna's service. So that's what the progression of Yukta Vairagya takes. Because before it's mine, but I connect it to Krishna. So that's the Yukta and the Vairagya. But it's still mine. Then it's a comfortable position and all that, but it's yukta because it's used for Krishna's service, and there's detachment because it's just for not uncomfortable. So there's more detachment and more connection. But then it comes to the point, is the only reason you're doing it is because it can please Krishna. And therefore, you're doing it without attachment to the results. Does that make sense? So then it comes to its actual position. So one can't claim the lower ones to be the higher ones. Yes, Yukta Vairagya is how it's used, but you can't say Yukta Vairagya and try to cut a higher level of Yukta Vairagya. Does that make sense? A higher can cut a lower, but not a lower cut the higher. But if it's your position, then you take that position, but then you have to accept that position. So if one is, let's say some activities are on the Madhyama level, some are on the neophyte level, some are high, like this. So those that are on the lower level, they would be seen as on the lower level. One wouldn't try to get prestige out of it. But the problem is those who need it, then they also need prestige. So then the problem comes up as they try to rationalize the position when it's not actually necessary. Right? So that's why then all the difficulties come up. Socially, the difficulties come up in the neophyte's position. The Madhyama social scene, basically, there's very minimal difficulty like that.
But there's a minimal social thing.
There's minimal social thing. It's more exact. It's becoming more personal. The concept of personal is actually there. The neophyte, the tendency is, unless you have a conditioning of being what we would call in modern context personal, then you won't have it. You know, in other words, if you joined, you were congenial. After you joining, you'll still be congenial. But otherwise, if you don't have it, then in the Madhyama stage, you'll develop it. Or the person who's congenial, it'll not be sentimental, it'll actually be real. Start to become real, right? But it actually, when you come to the level of a liberation of Brahman platform, where there's no bodily concept at all, then at that point, that's when you actually start to see personal. Right? Does that make sense? So then it would be like this. Okay, let us take, you know, the contemporary issues of, you know, being yourself and everybody else just accepting that and being broad-minded, and why can't they be? And, you know, and I in areas that don't really matter to me because I don't care, therefore I'm very broad-minded. And I push that as if it's something special. It's just, I don't care. So therefore, it's easy to be, you know, accommodating. Right? So now, let us say, so then one says, no, but here's the tradition, here's the practice. We should do it like that. No, but we're not the body, we're not this and that. Why do we have to limit that? You know, according to the Varnashram nature, people do things or this and that. Why do we have to organize like that? You know, we're not this body, we're beyond this body and everything like that. But if you look at it, it appears that we're talking about, we're being personal, we're going above the rules. But in reality, it's actually impersonal, because if we were personal, we actually were on the liberated platform. Then we'd look at it, now what is everybody dealing with? They're dealing with their conditioning. So that, for them, is their personal position. So because that's their personal position, in consideration of their personal position, according to Shastra, then that's how that I would deal with them. So if they don't like this, according to their position in according to Shastra, I wouldn't do that. Even though I know I'm not the body, and they think they are the body. You know, we see like Gargi with Vishwamitra. You know, so because she knows she's not the body, so she can deal on any level, but because everybody else does think in that way, she will follow the rules. And the point is, since you have to follow some form anyway, what does it matter which one you follow? So therefore, why wouldn't you follow the one that's easiest available, which is the one that you have? Right? In other words, she being a Brahmin, she being a girl, she then acts like a Brahmin girl. Right? Why act like a Kshatriya boy? You know, because that's going to be a little harder to pull off. Right? Unless you're Shikhandi. And then, you know, a little easier to pull off with some help from friends. Right? Yes.
You said that material world implies impersonalism. So, is it that in the initially the Rupa Goswami?
Do we need to have like a take a week for speech and drama class or something? So we speak louder.
So Maharaj, in the Nectar of Instruction, you know, Rupa Goswami mentions the six loving exchanges, you know?
Yes.
So, it's
how to begin. That's why we follow the form, is so we begin to be personal. Because what is it? Why am I, okay, someone's a brahmachari. Why do they follow the brahmachari duties? Because they're a person who's in that position. And therefore, how will they relate to everybody else as a person's in their position? So the brahmachari with the brahmachari, brahmachari with somebody senior, brahmachari with the grihasthas, brahmachari with the sannyasis. You know, then they're going to act in a particular way. So you're starting to understand the personal aspect. So the form of the Vedic culture is personal. That's why the modern can't relate to it. That's why the modern thinks it's not practical. Because if I'm trying to do something economic or political, you know, so it means it's about money or influence, right? Or, yeah. You know, so the social standing, the economic standing. Now, if I have to consider all the people I'm working with and all the things, that becomes burdensome. It slows down my process. So, therefore, the Vedic system is impractical. It's, quote unquote, theoretical. It's only theoretical for those who don't know what personal is. So, but it's not about the rules of it. It's about the personal aspect. So, a certain times rules adjust, but within the context of how rules adjust. Does that make sense? Just like, let us say, I can put the beans in soak them overnight, put them in the pot, you know, boil them for 5 hours. Right? Right. Now, I can also take the same beans, soak them overnight, put them in a pressure cooker, and then, you know, within a very short time, they're ready. Okay, mm-hmm. So there is short forms of doing things, mm-hmm. But can I get around that I have to soak them and boil them? No, that you can't do, because that's the nature. I want them cooked and they have to be boiled. I can't just take the dry beans and put them in the, you know, microwave and push the button. You know, okay, 2 minutes is irregular, then needs more time, I'll put them in 10 minutes. Yeah, then you have popcorn, yeah. You know, so which may not go well inside your burritos, but hey, you know, like that. I don't know if anybody's ever tried that, right? You know, take your tortilla, put some popcorn, you know, put some sauce on top, roll it up, you know. Throw in some cheese just in case, so people don't notice as much. You know, put so much chili that they'll go, "Wow, this is hot," and not notice this is popcorn. Yeah, okay. Yes, so it's personal. The basis is personal. The structure is personal, but the people involved in it may be impersonal. That's the smartas and the sahaja. They're all impersonalists because it's all about themselves. Is that in a sense? But it's the perfect system. That's why we say that's what has to be done. So when we say no rules, we think we throw that out. But why? Okay, we want to throw out Varnashram, great, but why don't we throw out the modern rules also? Mm-hmm. But they'll say, oh, I'm just being practical. That means you want to please the modern people, but you don't want to please humans. Because the point is that if you do consider people, strangely enough, even these modern people appreciate that more. The person trying to get the work done is the one saying being practical. Right? All the people in the office has just got screwed because there was a shortage of money, so they're not getting paid, they're not getting their bonus. They're not going, well, you know, the boss is just being practical, you know, like that. I understand the position and all that. Hey, you know, it's just, you know, I won't take my kids to the dentist and, you know, all those things like that. But, you know, what to do? Right? They will see it that why is he so, you know, not personal? Why isn't he considerate? Why doesn't he, you know, keep his promises? Why doesn't he do so? All personal quality, they'll all be thinking bad about. Mm-hmm. So since we put the emphasis simply on who's got the money, who's in control, then who can do that, then we'll say that's glorious. But what about everybody else who's involved? Therefore, impersonal. So the Vedic system is at least the form of it's personal, though your motive behind it may be totally impersonal. Right? So that's why when you come to the liberated state, that's when you can actually start being personal. The Mayavadis take it, that's when you stop being personal. But actually, that's when you start being personal. That's when you can really be personal, because then you don't see yourself by any conditioning, you don't see anybody else, you see the actual position from real knowledge. So that's why when you come to the liberated position, then you can actually see yourself properly as a person, as the sole servant of Krishna. And you can see Krishna and his devotees in their position and actually take up service to them. So that's when it becomes, you know, your solid position of personal. But for the impersonalists, that's when they negate, they only see personal in connection with the material, which we'll say is actually impersonal. And they'll say the spiritual is impersonal, which is actually personal. Where will that come from, that opposite of thinking? Right? There's only one position that does that. That's the mode of ignorance. So that means even this big impersonalist, even though they're so advanced, but they're actually still under the control of the modes of nature, so they're materialists. So we see is that we're talking about reversing the way of thinking and perceiving. That's the hermeneutics. Right? That's the whole point. So how we define, so we can see is what we're defining is opposite of all the materialists. That depending upon the materialist, they have a particular attachment to certain definitions. So that's where the arguments of hermeneutics will come. Right? So Vedanta Sutra then defines all of our hermeneutics according to what is actually in line with Krishna consciousness, and then all the other schools where they're not in line with Krishna consciousness, then how to deal with that. Different schools have different points of emphasis. So therefore, when it emphasizes in this way, we call it, you know, Nyaya. When it in this way, then we call it Vaisheshika. When it's in this way, we'll call it Shankhya. Does that make sense? Like that. But otherwise, it's just due to mode of ignorance, then they get things wrong. And those points that are common, then there. Like logic, the system of logic, how you logically think and just express yourself, that there's 100% agreement with Gotama. Now, that itself is going to get you to the transcendental platform. That's where we have a difference of opinion. Does that make sense? Yes.
So Maharaj, in this first adhyay, basically we are trying to mingle with the different words which are correlated to the Brahman, and just trying to establish that the personal aspect we are trying to get at.
Yes.
That's what is the aim.
Yes, yes. We're trying to bring out that this is Brahman. Mm-hmm. Brahman is everything. Because they even though their philosophy is Brahman is everything, they're not acting on that position that Brahman is everything, so they don't realize. Because the point is Brahman is that Brahman's a person, right? And so therefore, this is just the effulgence aspect. I mean, in other words, the person is so glorious with transcendental qualities that makes them effulgent, right? So if you see an effulgent person with great qualities, and they're doing something with those qualities, that's the person. So that's all three features. So you can appreciate them all at once. So just that you're so appreciating the effulgence and all that, you see, oh wow, that person looks, very, happy or powerful or, something. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first thing we notice. Then from there you can go to the qualities, and then we go there. Okay, we're all in the temple for darshan, right? Doing our normal thing, standing in our normal place. One of the ladies walks in, really fancy sari, really decked up, really going for it. What's the first thing you notice? That energy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the first thing you notice.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're talking about. That's the first thing that's caught. Then from there, then we go into the qualities of the person, and then, bad-mouthing that, and then bad-mouthing the person themselves, and then once we figure that we've, taken care of that nicely, then we go back to our normal just standing there in our, how you say, feeling good about ourselves, how we put, the universe back in its place and all that, and go back to taking darshan of the deity. You understand? But the point is the first thing we notice is the effulgence. So it's part of the whole scene. Now, in here, because we understand the effulgence, who it is, then we appreciate good qualities, then we can appreciate the person.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's about someone else. But here, we have trouble because it's about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, let us say, same scenario, but let's change the background of this. Let us say that this person was really down, very depressed and all that. We know them, they're a good friend, and they're just not, feeling good about themselves. They don't do anything nicely, dress nicely, care. They're just really bad. So we encourage them, get them there. Come on, you got to dress nicely. You got to get in there. You're okay. You're good. Everything's going to be all right. Okay? Now when we see them walk into the temple and looking so bright and effulgent and so confident, then we feel good. Right? Why? Because the whole point is in either set, it's about ourselves. Right? The first one is, who's this, coming in here like this? We're just doing the thing. I dressed only this much. We're just taking darshan. I decided this much is all I need to dress for taking darshan and doing the thing. So anybody who's beyond that, then that's bad. And anybody less than that, that's bad. Right? But this person I told, get out there and, get yourself to be known. And like that, because they're doing it, then they follow my instructions. I feel good. You understand? So it's always about ourselves on the material platform. Just whether we extend or not. Right? And then those people that are with us, then we extend, that they're part of my entourage. And I say, wow, look at her. Or wow, look at her. Whichever way I'm looking, dealing with it. And if they agree, then they're maintained as part of the entourage. If they don't, then I'm not going to talk to them the rest of the day. You understand? Yes. So that's the whole thing. The material world means it's about ourselves. So we're actually not personal. Maybe about ourselves who are personal. So in that way, that you can see is the seed for personalness, because we see ourselves as a person. We just don't see anybody else's that way. So Vaishnavism means understanding we're a person and everybody else is a person. So when we come to the liberated platform, we give up the mundane identity. That becomes very easy. Not that we can't start it before. It's already going on before. Otherwise, why are we involved? It just becomes easy at that point. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You say that if we're not acknowledging the person as a person, we're not actually being personal about ourselves either.
If we're saying again?
If we're not acknowledging our eternal position, then we're not being personal about ourselves.
No, either. No, because
we don't see ourselves as a soul, we see ourselves as a body. So
yes. 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 Yeah, exactly. Because then it's about the senses, about that. I'm getting that from identify with it. So that's false ego. So what we're saying is the liberated state, you deal on real ego. So then from there, then you can move forward. That's why we're not interested in liberation as a goal. Because for us, it's in the sambandha position. It's just a situation. In other words, being in the conditioned situation is not good. Being in the liberated condition, that's better, because then we're on the transcendental.
Mm-hmm.
But our goal is prema. Right? Our goal is not liberation. Is that, yeah. Yes.
Is it possible at all in general program, let's say, to be personal? Because we see that example when Krishna enters Dwarka. It's a general assembly.
Yes.
He's very personal.
Yes.
And, you know, we have an example of Shukadeva Goswami Maharaj, Parikshit, and Srila Prabhupada mainly explained that, you know, he was just looking just at me, although it was a big gathering.
Yes.
Everybody
yes.
felt like that. But yes. we don't see, you know, beside those, we don't see many examples.
Yeah.
So how is that possible?
It's just a matter of, that's why those forms are there. In other words, if you were personal, what would you do? Right? So, Prithu Maharaj, you know, take your example there. Prithu Maharaj walks into the assembly, or Krishna walks into the assembly. Then how does he deal? Right? He's going to deal according to hierarchy, right? Who's the most respectable and all that. So he's going to deal with the Brahmins. Then he's going to deal with, okay, the Kshatriyas, who's that, Ugrasena, and then everything else like that. Then it'll be friends, then this and that, until you get down to the common citizens. Right? So he's going to, you know, make that eye contact. He's going to do all those kind of things because he's personal. And he's not worried. He understands the relationship, so he can deal. He's not lacking confidence. Right? So then he knows his position, who he is, and everything like that. So then that'll be there. So that form is explained. That's the tradition. That's how you should interact. So in Manu, then it mentions that one has to respect others. So then that starts, and it starts from what it is, the Brahmins and Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras. Then you have the element of, okay, within Brahmins, and who has more knowledge, who has less knowledge, Kshatriyas, who has more influence, less influence, Vaishyas, who has more money, less money, Shudras, who has more skills, and that, who has less skills. Then on top of that, you add into it sacrifice. Who's done more sacrifice, who's given more for, you know, whatever is the position, what are relationships like that, so that will be considered. So you throw that all into the mix, and that's how then you're going to see everything. So you're going to deal with everybody, but you're going to deal according to that hierarchy. Does that make sense? And then, someone has one of those qualities that's higher than another's qualities, but that other one has that quality plus some others. So then you have to see who has what qualities and who has more of what qualities. So in other words, you have a person, two people who, you have all the people, they're rich. And then, but there's two guys that are richer than everybody else. But within that, the guy who's richer, that is as a relative, is going to be, you're going to deal with him before the guy that's richer than everybody else, before you deal with all the other guys. So you're going to make a distinction there. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so there's always going to be that aspect. You know, it's just like, let's say, you have the position on, you know, these I think it was just on Mother's Day, right?
Mother's Day.
Just last Mother's Day. So I think it was the White House had a program inviting moms who their sons were in the military, right? So then, now Mother's Day means all mothers are respected. Like that. But this was a special program for mothers and sacrifice. So it's mothers, that, you know, that them being mothers and that aspect of sacrifice. But on top of that, their children were in the military. Right? So that's more of a sacrifice. Right? Yeah, because how you say, feeding your kid and all that and the sacrifice you have to go through with that, that's sacrifice, right? It's 2 a.m, you'd rather be asleep, they're hungry and they want to play. That's sacrifice. But there's not a chance of losing the child, right? So the child being in the military, you could lose a child, that's more sacrifice, right? Does that make sense? So therefore, they had that special Mother's Day program for all mothers, but especially these mothers, right? You know, because White House, government, you know, like that, and so therefore, you know, sacrifice for the country, like that, blah. Does that make sense? So these things are all there. So this is the form of personal culture. So we follow it and all that, and it's good. Now, our dealings may be personal, but what's our motive behind that personal deity. So it's not that we can't be personal, but what's the motive behind the personal dealings? You know, if it's for ourselves, then technically it's limited in its personalness. So if it's only about ourselves, we'll say that's impersonal. Mm-hmm. Not that it's not personal, because you're yourself or a person, but mm-hmm. it's impersonal in that you're not considering other people on that same kind of platform. You know, so therefore the saying, do unto others as you would have done unto yourself, actually has a far more reaching position than simply the form of it. We just take it as the form, but it actually means as you are a person and one thing, you should consider others as persons. That makes it easy. Otherwise, to try to work out everything, that becomes very difficult. You know, in other words, you know, at the wedding, keeping the list of who gave what and how much they spent so you know how much to spend on all the other weddings. That's taking the external form of that one. You know? The internal form is used to person them and their position. What would you know, what would they be pleased with? Therefore, you buy them that gift. Does that make sense? So that's why there's the form of it, so someone can be following the form, be good at it, and be respected for being good at that personal dealings. But what we're saying is that it's only if you are seeing in context of devotional service that you're actually personal. Because then it's actually about Krishna as a person and his creation as individuals who are. Right? So it's a more subtle position. Because then the identity as servant of Krishna, see, is that you have the real nice guy and he does everything socially good, and, you know, even if it may create him problems, he's always going to behave nicely. Why? Because his identity is, I'm the nice guy. I'm the gentleman. I always do things properly. It's not that he's seeing on the transcendental platform that all souls are equal and they're all connected with Krishna. So when you see on that, then that becomes real personal. Before it's personal, but now it becomes in the same a real. That's the meaning of the really real thing. So we're following the real form. But now, when you add into the proper attitude, then it becomes really real. Is that... Yeah, so we see this subtle division that we're trying to... that we're making here. That when you come to the transcendental platform, that's when then things actually start. Otherwise, the problem is we'll start from here, which is fine, because all we're dealing with is names and forms. But then we'll think that that's accomplished. So among people with names and forms, we may be advanced. But there's a position beyond names and forms. And that's Brahman, right? Not the jiva. Because if we take it as the jiva, then we're still in the same position. Now it's just the no name and no form. You know, it's the name and form of no name and no form. But it's not that you've come to the point of actually understanding the Lord, His position as a person, the devotees as people, as servants of the Lord, and then ourself as a person who's a servant of the Lord. So it's the attitude that makes the difference. Is that okay?
Maharaj, in our dealings with devotees, in our relationships and interaction with devotees, this personal aspect, so because of our previous conditioning, there is a tendency to be unconscious and then we act impersonally.
Yes.
Now, how do we, you know, consciously get over this aspect? Only by introspection or...
It's introspection, but it's only going to be by introspection and connection with Krishna consciousness. Because why do you want to get over that? Why do you want to be conscious in your dealings with others so you're personal? What's the point?
Is that how we can have proper relationships and proper interaction to please them, to please the Lord?
Yes, but so you have to get back to pleasing the Lord. Because otherwise we just think it's nice, it's good. You know, we're devotees, we should have community. All devotees should, you know, have that loving affection for each other. We as devotees should all interact. Have I mentioned Krishna here? No, it's just I have this need for community. I identify as a community person. I identify as dealings on a nice level community person. In other words, I was not a cheerleader. Right? So therefore, then that's how I do. So I'm talking this, but actually it's just, it's nice, but it's sentimental, because where's Krishna in it? So it's still about ourselves. I want to be part of this loving community, because that will make me feel good. You understand? Rather than loving community is what Rupa Goswami recommends, because that's what Lord Chaitanya is expecting. That's how his community deals. So if you want to be part of his community, this is how you behave. Right? Somebody says? So you have to keep that in mind, because that will give the drive, that will give the potency. But how do you affect that is by what is recommended by the acharyas, specifically Rupa Goswami. Right? Does that make sense? And then the other acharyas commenting on that and expanding on that. That's then how we do. And then the Puranas give all kinds of nice examples of how great devotees have acted in this way. And then we use that. Don't get into Dale Carnegie. Because that will produce nice interactions based on economic development. Does that make sense? Because according to his definition, yes, Mr. Smith works for you. So as you're walking by on the floor and couldn't care less, as long as the supervisor is seeing that Mr. Smith is doing his job, and I'll hear from the supervisor anyway, if not the supervisor, the supervisor. So I don't actually have to deal with anybody on the floor, because they're just part of the paraphernalia of the business, right? But if you're walking on the floor and happen to bump into Mr. Smith, then as the head of the company, if you ask Mr. Smith how he is, how's the family? And if you can even remember his name, and then if you bump into him again, continue the conversation from last time. Bingo! This man is dedicated to your company. He's going to work harder. He's going to be less affected by laziness and the modes of nature and all that, and I'm going to make more profit. Okay? What about all the people I walk by on the street that have nothing to do with my business? According to Mr. Carnegie, am I going to be nice? He's not even, who cares? Because he doesn't even bring it up. It's not even a point of discussion. So the success books, they're only talking about in the areas of your own influence. Outside that, who cares? So therefore, it's artificial. It's only for economic, it's only for who controls the people, who controls the money. That's the bottom line, right? So, therefore, then what the scriptures give, what is culture, that's what we have to follow. Right? That's what we have to follow. Yes?
Just like what happens is sometimes through our dealings, we speak out some aspects which minimize the position, or we may make them feel bad because we're not conscious of these aspects.
Then you have to correct that.
So we become conscious of these only when we are pointed out.
Now contemplate it. If you want to change it, contemplate it. What should you have done? Go through it, how you could have done, what you should have done. And then next time, then you try to be more conscious. And depending upon how deep the anartha is, then it may take you more times. But the point is, if you're conscious and you want to correct it, then gradually it will correct itself. But if you don't want to correct it because it's more efficient to do it that way, because your identity is I'm the guy who gets things done, not the guy who, you know, gets caught up in all these sentimental considerations and therefore, you know, right? In other words, sentiments for losers. Then you're not going to correct yourself even if it's pointed out. So the point is why should you correct it? Because people are looking at you in a bad light. Okay, you're the guy that gets everything done, but no one likes you, and you want to be get everything done and to have people like you. So you're only going to do how much it takes to get them to like you. But then, how has that changed? No, it's because they're devotees, they're pleasing to Krishna. So therefore, I want to deal with them in that way. And so that's why I change it, because it'll please Krishna. Then whether I get a better social position or not, that's another thing. Does that make sense?
And then how do we increase our how do we become more conscious and aware of so many other aspects also?
By paying attention, by being conscious in the first place. See, we can only become conscious of all these things by becoming conscious of Krishna. All these things are included in Krishna. We become conscious of Krishna, we become aware of these things. Otherwise, to become aware of these things without Krishna, unless you have the conditioned nature to be like that, you won't be. Right? Does that make sense? Like businessmen. You walk into their office, nice arrangements, pucker arrangements, and tons of money. You walk into another office, place looks totally shabby, the guy's got tons of money. What's the difference?
The office.
Means one's more sophisticated and one's less sophisticated. But as far as business, they're both businessmen. So one has that personal, the particular nature, conditioned nature to pay attention to detail. The other one doesn't. He just sees the money and just, you know, his relationships and things like that. Both are nice guys, but one's more sophisticated. That's all. So if you don't have that sophistication by a conditioned nature, you're not going to have it by focusing on it. You know what I'm saying? Maybe slowly, slowly, because only if you have the potential can you make it. Like, I can take somebody who has no business acumen, nothing, and teach him all the details of business. Can he do business? No. That's the point. So if you're conditioning, there's not the potential there, you're not going to change it. But if you are Krishna conscious, because it's included in Krishna, you're doing it to please Krishna, which you can do as a soul. Every soul can do that. You could have those qualities. But it's not about those qualities. So as soon as it's about those qualities, you lose it. But when it's about Krishna, you have it. See, we want everything. We want to have it. You please Krishna. You're not worried about these other things, though it may be there. So that's the thing. As soon as we're worried it's there, we're actually functioning at a lower level. When we're not worried about it, it's there. So that's the meaning. Krishna says that for the devotee, then he's showing his mercy when he takes everything away. Because then they give up their attachments to the material world. They see as they can't be satisfied. But he says there's more mercy for that devotee. He's given them everything. But that doesn't mean that's that same mentality that was there that he took everything away from. And now they have everything. Because otherwise, they already had things, and then he took it away. So putting them back to that, how does it change everything? Because otherwise, then giving them everything, that's his mercy. But taking away everything is his mercy. So then how do you decide? Then is it arbitrary? No, it's that when they don't care about the things, they care about the service to Krishna, then them having everything, then you can say that's a higher mercy. Because then they'll have all that, use it in Krishna's service. But the point is they're coming closer to Krishna. That's the mercy. Right? Because if you're closer to Krishna, then Yukta Vairagya, you can connect anything. Right? And if you're at a lower level, then you know that our yukta vairagya may not be as yukta or vairagya as we think, and so it might be getting in the way, so Krishna takes things away. So in other words, we're talking about a change in the consciousness. That's the whole thing. That's where the hermeneutics comes from. It comes from consciousness. So in other words, if one's on Vaishnava Vedanta, that's the highest consciousness, so the hermeneutics is going to be everything's Brahman. Right? But if you're on a lower level of consciousness, on the material consciousness, karma or jnana, then it's going to be the hermeneutics means it's about the living entity and about material nature, because that's what you want. You either want the facilities from it, or you want to be able to get away from it. Right? I'm an individual, there's the material energy, that's causing problems. So I get rid of my individualness, and there's no material energy, I just go back into pradhan, so therefore then there's no problem, because pradhan doesn't do anything, it just sits there. So therefore, if I merge in pradhan, cool. Yes?
So hermeneutics, are they defined by nyaya, or everybody has their own?
Everybody means you have... No, nyaya will define terms. Now, those, how you identify those terms, that's your hermeneutics. Hermeneutics is your interpretation of it.
Okay.
Right? You know, what it would be used for, or what's its value, or that. That's the hermeneutics. But the definitions are one definition. Like that. Otherwise, how do you have a conversation? Like that. So the Vedic system is to be efficient, so they have a common vocabulary. That's why Sanskrit, everything goes back to the roots, you know, through the grammar, so that makes it very easy that it has various ways the root can come out as synonyms and various aspects. So if someone's using one, by reminding of the root, then you can bring it out to something else and there's not going to be an argument. Does that make sense? So it's very easy to define. But what is their values within that? So therefore, it means, in other words, your philosophy, your sadhana, your sadhya, these things are going to be, that's where you're going to see the difference. They're going to be all based on the scriptures, they're all going to be based on the Vedas. So, and what's recommended, but what you want to get from where and how, that's going to be different. Like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Tatparya linga is the hermeneutics that we use specifically.
It means it's also a generic. It's within that there may be the specifics of how we're going to define. So, in other words, you would see the hermeneutics in that. So just like in the opening here, we're talking about here, janmadyasya yataha. Right, so that's the first one. How does it open? How does it close? That's the first point of Tatparya Lingas. So, because it opens, now it's time to inquire about the Supreme, then that must mean, or about Brahman, so that must mean the whole work is about Brahman, and inquiry into Brahman, or knowing Brahman.
That is Adhati Brahma Jikyasa. That is Adhati Brahma Jikyasa, the first one. This is generally
okay. Going back to the very beginning. So, in the beginning, there is that love for Krishna. Right? Yes?
Yeah.
Yes. And so, Vyasadeva has, therefore, in, you know, according to his position, according to his authority, according to his realization, he has compiled the Vedic literatures, written Mahabharata and Vedanta Sutra. Yes?
Yes.
Now, Narad Muni comes to him and explains to him that he's done a great job, but he hasn't taken it far enough. The understanding has not gone far enough. Right? And so people will get caught up on the secondary attributes of the Vedic literatures that he's presented and miss the primary, which is about the Supreme Lord. So then contemplating that, then it said he came to that position of Brahman, and then he was able to see things in the clear state. So he could see Krishna and his devotees, the interaction, you know, the aspect of rasa. Right? And so then that brings them to the state of now dealing with Dasamul instead of Nava Prameyas, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then with Dasamul, then it's about Krishna and the relationship with the devotee. So Achinta Beda Veda Tattva. Mm-hmm. Okay? And so having done that, now what did he write in his maturity?
Mm-hmm.
And how does it start? Bingo. Okay. Okay. So in other words, Atato Brahma Jigyasa means now inquire about the Supreme. Who's the Supreme? Janmadyasya Yataha. Yeah. Right? And where do you get that? Shastra Yoni Atvat. Right? You know? You understand? So that's what's been going on. Because it's not just about Brahman and that's it, but it's about the person who is Brahman. That's what we're trying to get to. Yes.
We're going back to hermeneutics.
Yes.
So we define the philosophy by hermeneutics, or we
use hermeneutics to define. In other words, tatparya linga is how you know what's important in a literature.
So it's just a generic term that can be applied on any literature.
Yes, on any literature, just like, okay, opening. So we dealt with opening. So that means it must be about Brahman, it must be about the Supreme. So then the next one of the next points that comes up is anything repeated. Now, how many times have we brought up the point, why again a discussion about this word means Akash? So what does that mean? That's important. In other words, all things are Brahman. Again. Or things glorified, then what's here is then the glorification of the position of the Lord, not the living entity, not Pradhan. Does that make sense? You know, what's unique, what's all these different things. In other words, what's made special, what's pointed out, what's special, what's repeated, that's what you know is, that's the important point, that's the topic. Right? Now, how you'll interpret that topic, that's your hermeneutics. You know, it's not that this is all not hermeneutical, but its point is you'll have your specific definition. So everyone will use the tatparya linga, so they're going to come down to a particular thing. But then the point is they'll say it's jiva that's being repeated, not Brahman. We're saying no, it's Brahman that's being repeated.
Can you say both? They were repeated.
They're repeated, but in what position? So we're saying it's repeated in relationship of the jivas as junior and the Brahman is superior. You know, it'd be just like within logic, you have 16 aspects of logic, but the most important is Siddhanta, right? So within hermeneutics, then this tatparya linga is a very important part. But at the same time, is there's going to be what's the purpose of that? You know, to come to that conclusion. Brahman, therefore, is the highest purport of Shrutis, following the principle that words denoting the body have the capacity to denote the possessor of the body. The Sutrakar is upheld with unwavering consistency that in every Adhikarana, Brahman is established as the subject matter. Right? It always comes back to that. That's the whole point, is that they're taking all these different other angles and trying to say it's about other things. It's not that they have a problem with Brahman, but they're just saying these things are not about Brahman. Because why? They want to say they are Brahman. That's their attachment. Because if we take this, everything's Brahman, we're eternal, we're an individual, we're always under the control of the Supreme Brahman, like that. And even in the liberated position, we're still under that control. Then what does that mean? It means I'm servant. I'm not the controller and enjoyer. And the conditioned living entity means I'm the controller and enjoyer. They're not interested in this other aspect. You understand? So that's why they're going to fight for that. Right? They're going to fight for these things. The Jaimini is going to fight for I'm the controller and enjoyer because of the benefits of doing the yajna. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura ki.